noche te sueño. Para que no dañen este amor tan bello. Y yo te quiero, y tú me quieres. Como tú quieres, mami, que yo no te sueñe. Que yo te quiero, y tú me quieres. Como tú quieres, mami, que yo no te sueñe.
Mi corazón es mío,
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 mío.
Mi corazón es tuyo,
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 tuyo.
Quedó claro lo que te quería decir.
Mi es
mami, atrevo a decirle que yo soy tu amigo especial, ¿ok? Pónselo claro. Esto es lo del dinero. Cuba Record, el Money Flow Music, la compañía que produce lo que se pone de moda. Music Hit Factory, nuestra factoría.
Hello and welcome back to Sperio on WMBR Cambridge. So it's you're listening to the show about the Western Hemisphere
and all other parts of the world
and
too.
Many other parts of the world, especially lately. So this is fundraising week on this radio station. So we're trying to raise funds to help pay for our operating expenses and stuff like that. So the phone number to call if you would like to make a donation is 617-253-8810. And I also want to just tell our listeners that if you have anything that you're interested in hearing on Sperio, like a certain type of music or a certain type of speaker, or just even something random, something off the wall that you like, oh, I really would wish I could have like Spanish lessons, I don't know, or something random, you can send us an email at sperio@mit.edu, and I'll tell you that email again. It's sperio@mit.edu, and you can send us an email with any suggestions you have or whatever you would rather hear from our show, and we'll try to implement it as best we can. So
plus, if you have money and you don't have money right now, but you know that you will later, it's always good to know. We keep the fundraising website up for an additional week after fundraising week ends, so you still have a chance to donate if that little paycheck comes in a little bit later at wmbr.org. It's 7:01, time for us to bust on out of here and make room for the amazing, mysterious music for human beings. Muchísimas gracias y chao, chao.
Welcome. مرحبا بكم في Music for Human. I am a Dr. Jalas Sakran, and I welcome you to this special Gold Purification Edition of Music for Human. Do you know who I am?
I do. You are Dr. Jalas Sakran.
Welcome, Aurora.
Welcome, Dr. Jalas.
Aurora is my co-host this evening. Aurora is a vocal specialist.
I specialize in vocal therapy.
What does that entail, exactly?
In soothing the soul through the enchanting rhythms and vibrations of one's voice.
You enchant souls.
I soothe souls through enchanting rhythms.
Can you walk us through what a typical therapeutic session may be like?
It really depends on the patient. Patients are all different, just like people are all different, and yet the same. One individual may need a warm-up session, much like is it like in a chorus. Or they may need to scream a little bit at the beginning in order to exude the frustrations and harsh capitalism of the surroundings.
So, if such a person were to visit you, how would you handle that? What would the session be like?
If a person who needed to scream?
Yeah, for example.
Well, first I would allow them to express their current emotions, their current state, so that they may rise above it and enter into a meditative, a more calm and meditative state, where they could see their own self on a less physical and more metaphysical plane.
Could this sort of therapy be done over the phone?
It's possible, although I like to have physical contact with the patient, especially as a beginner. Most of them are unable to remove themselves from the physicality.
Well, to engage in therapeutic contact with us listeners, call 617-253-8810. Marhaban, caller.
Oh, hello. What's going on, y'all?
Welcome to the air.
I'm sorry because I'm not in town. I was calling actually from across state lines here tonight. What's the topic of conversation so far? I was listening to your show a couple weeks ago. Man, you guys have some interesting things to say.
Well, thank you, caller. Tonight we have so far been discussing Aurora's career in using the voice to therapeute her patients.
Oh, man, because that's half the reason I'm calling. I'm glad that Aurora's on the air. Man, I tell you what, that Aurora sounds like she's a good-looking girl. Is that the truth?
Well, you know, it is difficult for one of my age to be fair, but certainly she seems in the prime of youthful and feminine vigor.
Oh, man. I guess she's a professional voice kind of girl, right?
Yeah, Aurora, would you care to address that?
Yes, I think that the important thing is not the physical plane of beauty, but more of the of one's presence, which you cannot really feel over the air.
Oh, what? I feel that. But I mean, you can't claim to have transcended the physical plane completely. I mean, there's still going to be some sort of primal urges in there, right? Am I right?
One cannot entirely transcend the physical plane, but one must realize that it is not just the physical plane that we are enmeshed within a metaphysical, within an imaginary plane that we must drift through consciousness.
Yeah, caller, I think that part of embracing a transcendental experience can be had by truly embracing physicality as well as spirituality.
Well, I wouldn't mind embracing a little spirituality with your homegirl over there. You know what I'm saying? Well, I don't want to be lewd or nothing, but
well,
man,
perhaps you should enter some more.
That voice is like poetry, you know?
Well, thank you, Color. I believe that when you enter more communal meditative states, that perhaps you can release your metaphysical energy in a better fashion.
Oh, I don't mean to cause any conflict.
No,
I hope I didn't offend.
Oh, not at all, caller. But I think that it just strays us a bit from the discussion that we were having.
You all willing to give me a fresh start?
Oh, of course, certainly, caller. I think we're all deserving.
Really, the topics of conversation drift in and out like, just like the wind.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
No, it's the beauty of this show that it is the caller and our interactions that create the topic of conversation.
Well,
I think there's a little bit of this caller in all of us.
Well, yeah, I suppose I do have some work to do to refine my presentation a little bit, I suppose. So, I didn't mean to offend. So, let me take a back seat, listen to y'all for a minute, and see if maybe I can get a feel for, where y'all going.
Of course, caller. Aurora, for our caller in particular, is there anything striking about his voice that would be something that you would encourage him to enter therapy to resolve?
Well, there are a few stressful notes in there, a few a sort of strained tones that indicate a sort of suppressed inner self that perhaps he needs to enter a more meditative environment to somehow release his energy, his negative energy, in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you make a conscious effort to hone your spirituality? Do you express your spirituality through your use of words? Is it more the words, or is it more the presentation?
Well, it's a combination of many factors. There's a sort of alliterative beauty that can come from those with high vocabularies.
Because I guess I do have a tendency to express myself sort of in a blunt fashion, but I guess what I was trying to express is that you radiate a certain serenity about you that I apologize for being a little bit on the primitive side, I suppose, but I guess your serenity is attractive to me on some level.
Well,
that's
thank
all.
You, caller. I've entered years of self-vocal therapy in order to achieve.
How do you train in what I would think to be a little bit off the beaten path? How do you train in something like that? I mean, do you have a mentor, or is it more book learning, or is it kind of like a Zen Buddhism kind of thing?
Well, caller, one of the lovely offerings of Aurora here is a pamphlet on just this very topic that we are extending to all of the listeners who donate to the station during our show. So if you were to donate any amount, then we would be very pleased to send this to you.
Oh, this is also you're taking donations, like financial donations, like a public television or like public radio station kind of donations?
Precisely. Yeah, this is our one fundraising event of the year.
And it's a great opportunity to loosen yourself from your capitalistic confines.
Well, it's certainly loosening some of my capital assets from my wallet, but I'd be glad to donate because I was in town in Boston a couple weeks ago. I don't know, have much in the way of familiarity with what you all do here at this radio station. But man, I was listening to some of the stuff. Man, it's wild. I mean, you guys start talking, and man, I was sitting back in my car. I didn't know what the heck it was. I'm listening to this, and I'm like, man, these people, they seem to know what they're talking about. And, you know, some people call in. It was enlightening. I will say that much. How much can I donate? And, like, how do I do it? Do I just send, like, should I just, like, send cash in the mail? Or you guys take, you know, like, personal, like, checks, credit cards? What do we do here?
Well, caller, if you permit us to put you on hold, then one of the operators would be grateful to take a donation.
I would be more than happy.
Well, that would be wonderful, caller. Stay on the line. Let's bring another voice in with us, perhaps briefly in a short while. In the meantime, Aurora, can you tell us a little about about the pamphlet that you mentioned?
Well, there are a few topics covered in the pamphlet. It mostly describes how to embrace your inner vocal soul and how to soothe yourself in a vocal manner, and it also describes the teachings that I've gone through and the self development of this practice, really. Which I discovered through it wasn't really something that was present in exterior. I had an enormous stuttering problem, and
then you managed to resolve
it,
this internally.
Yes. Through extreme meditation and some wonderful New Age practices, which allowed me to soothe myself by understanding my own resonances.
And I find a similar experience occurs with many of my skin patients. Let's bring another voice in to join us. Caller, welcome.
Oh, hi, Aurora.
Hi, welcome.
Oh, you have so much patience. I think it would be a good idea to edit your calls. But anyway, I wish I had as much patience as you with the gentleman that just spoke. But his voice is a voice, and he was speaking his voice. But I just had a question. I'm a Reiki practitioner, and my name is Maggie. And
Welcome, Maggie.
Oh, thank you. And I use crystals, and I believe in speaking your true voice and speaking the truth about who you are, and I believe in that your word is your sword. And I've been having a problem with the back of my neck, and I've been using lapis lazuli and azurite around my throat area to open it up. And I believe that if you don't speak your truth, in it manifests itself in physical disease.
So you feel that you have somehow lost your true voice?
Recently, yes. I mean, I work on it all the time. But I do networking sometimes. Have you ever heard of networking?
Mm-hmm.
Chiropractic networking? And it's not the injury. That's not the injury that is the underlying causes. Anything around your neck area is usually your creative voice is not being met.
Well, caller, something that I find that soothes those with sore throats. And now, we're not talking about actual like spinal neck pain, because that is out of my area of expertise. But anything that strains on your vocal cords can lead to blisters and all sorts of nasty effects. Usually what I suggest is that those with those sorts of problems go through the regular rigorous warm-up routine of a actual choir.
An operatic, like vocal exercises?
Yes.
What about, like, Gregorian chant?
So the thing is that Gregorian chants are wonderful, and they can allow you to enter into a metaphysical state quite easily, but what you need to do is to stretch your vocal cords, because they're being strained, much as if you ran without stretching your legs, they would begin to be painful.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's interesting.
I think also, the caller, that the your ability to chant well just as a vocalist's ability to perform various arias would depend greatly on the tessitura of your voice.
The screaming sounds pretty good too.
Yes, although in your current state, that's probably not a preferred method.
It's somewhat
It's for those with strong voices and strong, strong emotions that really need to be expressed. It's a very drastic technique that I use only when more softer, you know, resonant techniques don't actually work.
Oh, I see. So it kind of brings you back. Maybe after the screaming, it brings you down.
It's sort of like a slap.
Oh.
But I understand it can be quite cathartic to finally scream.
Yes.
And to let oneself express such a primal but really blunt emotion, which I mean, I could imagine that it would also cause some damage, but to the vocal cord. So I think it should be used with care.
Yes,
absolutely.
Definitely.
I have a book on chanting. I think I'll pull it out. The name of it is Chanting, but I forget who wrote it. So thank you for your advice, and it's a great show.
Well, thank you so much for
calling.
For calling and for listening.
Thank you.
And it's really lovely to just hear someone's voice.
Yes, and she had such a soft one. I could tell that her personality was very soothed and relaxed, despite recent problems.
Yeah, you just get the faint echo of some stress, but she really seems to be handling it, to be approaching it with a philosophical mind.
Yes.
Do you find that, I would imagine that by the time that one of your... By the time that a patient actually approaches you and to actually come into therapy, that they already have embraced the fact that there is some problem.
Yes, there's usually the voices that I hear in the beginning are usually they make me weep for them.
But at the very least, it's unlike the voices, the sort of donkey-like braying that one hears in the streets, where a person is not even aware that there's something underlying.
No, and, that's very true.
And has not actually sought therapy.
That's true. There are the voices that I hear in the street. I mean, now that I've spent about 12 years in this practice so far. Now I can identify almost every emotion in their voices. I can identify the stresses in their lives. I can identify those who have bills that are unpaid, and it really brings home the fact that capitalism really isn't working, that we aren't made to stress each other out by unpaid bills, that we should be one with the earth and just allow those other external factors to wash away.
It's interesting that you bring up capitalism. Is it because we are asking for donations today that capitalism comes up?
Well, yes. I mean, that's one factor that we have to deal with, is that we have to get money from these people in order to continue our show, and as in a certain sense, giving money is a very freeing thing. As you know, I've spent large stretches of time communing in the forest with the animals and other creatures, and living without money is one of the most freeing, most stress-free things that you can do.
Well, here to join us and to perhaps facilitate our discussion on capitalism is Dr. Zina Pfannkuchen, expert on neologistics and Maxwellian mechanics.
Thank you. It's very good to be here. I was just out on the street, actually, trying to solicit some donations in a new kind of rhizomatic direct action approach to fundraising. That is, I had a small tin can, And I was actually initially trying to sell the tin can because, as you know, I'm a Marxist. To the extent that anyone can actually be a Marxist in 2009, I try to maintain some kind of adherence to a Marxian tradition. And the idea that production entails value, that is to say, the person who has produced this tin can, it's not actually made of tin, but it's approximates, it's from what I could make out of materials available. So it is more of an aluminum foil wrapped cup, shall we say. So I was holding this out, trying to sell it, and no one wanted to buy it to give money to WMBR, but somebody did actually put a dollar inside the can. And this completely changed my understanding of how I was seeing space at the time, because I had seen this as an object that I wanted to get rid of, and instead someone inserted something into it, which was a dollar.
Making it a space that desired to be filled.
Yes, exactly. That instead of being a product, it actually became something of a consumer, completely changing its role in relations of production.
Yeah, and I think something also has to be said for the thing, or for appreciation to a thing for existing. You know, the once again, you know, the tin simply existed in the ground before you collected it and shaped it into the can that you proceeded to attempt to sell. But you know, just as the fruit lives on the tree, the tin lives in the ground, and we are here producing without the expectation of reward.
Yes, and I think that in this age of globalization and an increasingly service-based economy, we really have to rethink relations of production and what constitutes the material. We are engaged in a kind of intellectual production or media production through this program. We are producing something of value. However, it's not something that can be touched. It's not a tangible object that can be bought and sold on a market in that sense. We are public property, public.
Most things that are close to the human heart are intangible.
Yeah, I think there's some truth to that. The idea that you would buy love is ludicrous, or that you would buy, for example, jealousy, or that you would sell jealousy, or other emotions.
Or perhaps apply it like a daily cream.
Like limerence, or indeed, you know.
Although happiness for some people can almost be consumed.
And I think that all of these categories are used by contemporary marketing professionals indeed to sell objects. They say, buy this and you will have love, you will have jealousy, you will have limerence.
Although donating can bring nothing but spiritual joy.
I think it could bring other things, but spiritual joy certainly seems to be one of them.
I stand corrected.
It'll bring a tax deduction.
I'm sorry?
It'll bring a tax deduction.
Stay tuned to Music for Human for a brief word from the wonderful people who are making our fundraising possible.
WMBR wishes to thank the following restaurants for their contributions this week. Toscanini's Ice Cream in Central Square, Cambridge. Online at Toski.com. Blue Ribbon Barbecue on Washington Street, West Newton, and on Mass Ave, Arlington. Online at BlueRibbonBarbecue.com. Emma's Pizza in Kendall Square, online at emmaspizza.com. P&R Ice Cream and Restaurant, Blue Hill Ave, Mattapan. And the Plow and Stars Restaurant and Nightclub between Central and Harvard Square, Cambridge. Online at plowandstars.com.
Well, we're back now with the whales, with Aurora.
Hello.
Dr. Zina Pfannkuchen.
Good evening.
And we are just joined now by Lee Smith, cowboy philosopher. Welcome, Lee.
Howdy. Sorry for my lateness, Mark. My horse died on the way over.
Now, how do you feel about your horse?
Well, you know, I do have a lot of animal connections in this world.
Let me interrupt you there and rephrase this question. Could you place a value, a monetary value, on your feelings for the horse?
Yes, about $2,500.
And that is the price of a stallion?
The price of this horse nearing the end of its life. Kind of like a used car. It's a lame horse.
That's interesting. So you were not particularly close to this horse?
I was, but it was his time, you know?
So what do you do with the body then? I'm very curious. In this urban area, how can one dispose of a horse?
You bury it.
Are there horse cemeteries or disposal facilities for this sort of activity?
Well, I just use Killian Court, actually.
I'm not familiar with this location. Is it a funeral parlor?
Oh, it was just on the way here, actually. It's just a little square of grass.
Mm. Yeah, I think nothing could be more natural, and it's very pleasing to me as one who walks around Boston in these... even in these temperatures, in bare feet, to think that only a few meters below my naked skin are the remains of horses and other people and creatures that are more enlightened than both horses or people, which is enlightened people. And all of these come together and form a cake which I walk upon and frost.
It's a beautiful image. It brings forth the contact oneness of all humanity, that below us are the remains of generations and generations of people, and that above us will one day be the newer generations.
And I mean, we're all carbon.
Indeed. There's a great storyteller from this area who has actually recently been gone from this world. He just passed away this week. Brother Blue, who was a fixture of Cambridge storytelling circles for many, many decades. He was 88 years old, and he could be seen in the streets and the doorways and the stages and the coffee houses of in and around Harvard Square, telling stories of American folklore and new ideas that he would bring in, and he would see someone on the street and turn them into a story.
Perhaps a somewhat unlamented genius.
Oh, I think he's quite lamented. I think he'll be very missed. There's a great story about him. It's odd to tell a story about a storyteller, because I know that if he were here, he would obviously tell the story much better than I would, as I am not a storyteller. I deal with words, not sentences or narratives. But in the great blizzard of 78, there was many, many feet of snow that had fallen on Cambridge and the entire area. And there was a great mountain of snow at what's now the Harvard Square T-stop. That had just amassed. It had been already amassed because plows had created a great mound of snow, and on top of this mound there was a man, and the man was Brother Blue, and he was telling a story of the great snowfall as the snow fell and documenting it through language as people skied along, because that was the only way of transport during this storm.
It is strange to tell a story of the storyteller, but in a strange way we might all be in a story. And I think that if the universe was a story, that it would start out with there was this big ball of energy And then perhaps the last line would be, they're all iron now.
Mm.
Big ball of iron. Very cold iron, I think, too.
It's an interesting thought that I want to go back to, though. The idea that the great storytellers are telling stories of the great storytellers, which told stories of the great storytellers. And that perhaps we will be the new story. A sort of, like many things in the universe, a sort of fractal story embrace.
If I tell your story, will you tell my story?
I would tell your story even if there was nothing to be told. And yet I should say that I would sing your story.
I'm not sure it's possible for one story to contain itself, you know, which would ultimately be required. Could one tell one's own story? Because would not the telling be a part of the story?
Yes, but it could be summarized in the words of, and then I told this story.
I'm not sure. I mean, would then not the story have to end with those words?
It would be ongoing. The story really never truly ends.
So the story would, but the whole last chapter of the story would be, I'm still writing the story, the story continues to be written, I'm almost done with the story, that's it, I'm done. And then the story would be over. No time for an index or a bibliography.
I think that there is more to these stories, though, than simply a beginning, middle, and end. There's also the body that is producing the story. There's the physicality that mouths the words and the hand that writes on the page or types on the screen or types the keyboard that then, you know, produces an image on a screen.
So one could think the story and the story would suddenly exist.
Instantaneously, I think that we may be moving in that direction, and then process will be de-emphasized. Writing would be an entirely different matter, and that there may be increasingly non-narrative forms of hypertextual productivity and creativity.
I could create a ball, and the ball would be the story of the ball, and all the parts of the ball would be the story of all the parts of the ball. No, all the parts of the story of the parts of the ball. I'm sorry, I'm lost.
Yes, but I think that a ball is an excellent metaphor because it doesn't have distinct parts that can be readily isolated. That it is, from any angle, the same and yet different. And I think that is a wonderful model for thinking about new forms of narrativity that are not simply a straight line from beginning, middle to end. Because history, indeed, doesn't operate that way.
And is this a question of physics, that some year we'll be able to take the atoms that are assemble a particular object and be able to extract from those particles the story of the object?
For those of you who have your own stories to contribute or ideas about stories, please call in at 617-253-8810. And as a reminder to those who donate, you will get a pamphlet from me describing how to vocal therapize yourself.
Or to at least begin those elements. Am I right?
To begin your self-help at home.
I would like to make an offer for any donors, that if they are able to make a donation to the WMBR, that I will create a neologism for them, personally.
And for those who can join me in my trip to Patagonia, I can definitely offer a spare sleeping bag and some clean, plains-cooked food, tundra-cooked food.
On my part, I only hope that the station, which permits us to come and to connect with so many of you, can continue to run. And I offer my blessing and my thanks and my industry and why not, my chastity for those donors who care to contribute.
That's a beautiful offer. And yes, it's a thing that only that you can only achieve through donation, that Music for Human Beings can continue to run and to enrich your lives and our lives as we continue to connect upon this oral plane.
I would like to throw out a neologism for free in the hopes that perhaps someone will donate and then engage some more. This is there's a word in German, Befangenheit, which means basically bias or prejudice. And I would like to suggest that I've been thinking about how this sounds very much like the word Gefangenheit, or to be imprisoned, the prison imprisonment, and that perhaps there's a sense of imprisonment that one feels when they are biased, that one's bias or prejudice will actually function as a prison, a prison of the mind, to a prison of one's social relations, so one is unable to engage fully with the world and with the broad extent of social beings because they are so prejudiced and cut off from certain humans.
Well, let's break out of our prison and join with a caller. Caller, marhaban.
Hey guys, I was just wondering if you were talking about things like meditation at all on your show.
Of course, we reach all sorts of new age topics. Meditation is one of our favorites.
Cool. Well, I've been starting doing that for probably about 2 months ago, and I've been working on reaching to like a very deep creative side. Like, I've been buying these CDs like with the music on it, very soothing, and there's a couple of them. There's like awakened mind state, theta brain waves and stuff. But I was just wondering if like you can reach those points of meditation with like without that music, if that's even possible.
Color, of course. I mean, there are certain things that can aid you personally. You must find those things which can sort of fold you into the transition of meditation, but then slowly you can remove yourselves from those external influences, from those training wheels.
Yeah, I've found that at first when I started meditating that it required immense preparation, that I had to separate myself from others, that I required isolation and almost sacrificial elements, like I had to sacrifice time and space and plants and various things, and in order to achieve any state of meditative awareness. But with practice I found less and less of these elements were necessary, and my goal, my desire is to at some point be able to meditate in New York.
Noise around you and just completely block it out?
Precisely, and I think blocking it out not quite right, but to realize that it is unimportant and to be able to
become subsumed within the entire state of chaos that surrounds you.
To, this idea of separating oneself from it is can be seen as the same as embracing it completely, having it become a part of you. And we walk around in the air, we never think about it, because it is so present.
And what is music? is it the birds chirping? Is it the air through which you are walking as it breaks across your face? Would you ever say, I cannot meditate because there are no birds chirping, because there is no air breaking across my face?
For me, like, the best place to meditate is like real deep in the woods, or sometimes like I'll go real deep and I'll climb some mountains around where I live, and I find that to be the best place.
Do not sometimes the bugs bother you? The bugs?
Sorry?
Are there bugs on your face when you are in the woods? Does this get in the way of your meditative praxis?
See, that's the hard thing. I try to just, like, let them be, you know? Yeah, there's, like, flies, like, spiders crawling all over me, but the first, you know, few times I've been doing that, I would just, like, kind of, like, you know, not really freak out, but just kind of, like, swipe them up. They got, you know, like, they kind of, they mess me up, but I'm just trying to work on, like, ignore them, and, you know, it doesn't matter if they crawl over, just kind of, like, you know, let the universe be, and...
Well, caller, rather than ignoring the fly that crawls across your face, feel instead every leg that it presses against your skin. Feel it come in contact with your soul, and feel the fly on not merely the physical plane. Try to feel the essence, to feel the aura of every creature that's around you. At first, it can become a very heady feeling, but eventually you will become one with the fly.
I've found also that at first I would meditate in places where I would not be approached by any other life to as great an extent as that is possible. And one of the things that I would meditate about was particularly in my second phase of development was being consumed. And how that experience would change me.
You would cause yourself to be consumed physically?
Yeah, I would meditate upon being consumed.
You know, this kind of brings me up to something. I mean, I really want to tell a lot of people about this, especially any doctors, but sometimes I swear, like, when I do reach a certain point, meditating out in the woods, I all of a sudden hear... like little voices going around, and then like something's happened to me. Like when I start to hear those little voices, I can't always quite make out what they're saying, only little words of a sentence, but
you are perhaps reaching what we call the sort of metaphysical highway, that you are stretching your soul out and coming in contact with those around you.
So, Aurora, you're saying that what is happening to the caller is that he is opening his ears to such a great extent, you know, and by ears I mean his spiritual ears.
Exactly, his spiritual soul.
Maybe a better term would be his spiritual antenna. So he's tuning himself to the great chaos and madness of the entirety of Earth's voice.
I've been thinking a lot about it through this book I've been reading. It's called The Holding Sky of Awareness, Experiencing Joy Through Ego Disidentification. And it's a pretty interesting book where it starts off with a man whose life is completely shattered, you know, after a marriage not working out. And then all of a sudden, like, very similar, he said a voice came to him and told him to write. And so he claims that this whole book he wrote on a bunch of little things, including, like, loneliness, anger, madness, little stories about, you know, being lost. And it's just kind of interesting how he says he didn't even write that book like it was somebody else.
It's interesting how that ties in with our earlier discussion. So the book, in this case, was the order. It was the command. The story of the book and the story of the person are the same.
Yeah, and like, basically, a lot of the ideas is that, like, no matter how lonely you are, or, you know, how angry you get, there's always a little thing to remember, like, perhaps the spirits all around you kind of, you know, helping you out and guiding you, and I wish I had the knowledge to be able to, like, talk about this better, but it's just definitely a book you guys should check out, though.
Well, that sounds like a beautiful and enchanting story. And perhaps to aid yourself in your baby steps in meditation, you should come in contact with others who are also meditating and learn to do a sort of group meditation, and you can watch their processes.
I've gone to one in my hometown at a Unitarian church, and it was actually very nice. But the only thing was, I'm only 22 years old, and everybody else there was like probably 40, up to like maybe age 60.
Well, many of those people probably have as youthful souls as you do.
Well, I can also identify with the caller because I found a similar experience when I was young. Caller, I think that it's simply that you are a little mature regarding spiritual matters, and this is a fine thing, you know, to be philosophical. Many people don't reach that state of philosophy until they are too old to really make a change.
Yeah. I got introduced by my uncle, and he didn't find out about meditation, yoga, you know, open consciousness, awareness, until he was about in his 50s, and I was just introduced to it about 2 months ago, and it's completely starting to change my life now, the way I've been, you know, meditating all the time, and it's wonderful.
That's great to hear.
Yeah. And what is this show called again?
It's Music for Humans.
Music for Humans. Cool. Because I just jumped in my car and I heard you guys talking about it. These guys sound really relaxed right now and they're talking about cool stuff.
I find it fascinating, caller, that you mention spirits. And this is something that I hear frequently about spirituality, but less frequently about actual spirits and spirits infusing the environment, which I think is a less frequent understanding of the world. Max Weber, of course, about 100 years ago, wrote that although traditionally people believed that there were all these spirits and there's quite an animistic view of the world, he said now we do not believe in spirits at all. Religion has changed. People believe in a sort of colder, rationalistic world, even if they do believe in a God. And I would say that now we may be even moving into another phase of social religious understanding in which it's more of an animatronic world rather than an animistic world. And
yeah.
With a fair amount of animosities as well.
Definitely that. And just like, you know, there's been a lot of conversations around because, you know, how we're heading, you know, to the 2012 thing. Everybody thinks, you know, it's going to be the end of the world. Well, I'm starting to kind of hope it could be the absolute opposite. Perhaps we actually, all humans will come together and maybe we will reach a higher consciousness, or who knows? I mean,
well, caller, I perceive the 2012 situation much as the tarot reading of the death card, which you know, is not an actual death, but it's a revolution and it's a fresh beginning.
Yeah, exactly. But everybody is like assuming that, you know, we're all going to be burning, like, you know, how they're making those movies right now. Like, everybody's just waiting for that. And it's like nothing's getting any better at all, I think.
Well, it's the story that many people who are not reaching this enlightened state love to hear. It's the story of destruction and of pain. People in the society tend to revel in that.
They do.
Well, and you know, another thing is that, you know, we should take all of these signs and these soothsayers with a little skepticism. I think it may be healthy because really they've been around in, you know, every century. There have been people that have been telling us that the end of times are just coming up. They're always around the corner. And, you know, I think it's healthy to just continue to live your lives.
Well, at the same time, I believe that it's healthy to always have this imminent sense of of enormous change, it keeps us hopeful and it keeps us reaching for a higher state of being.
I think it's healthy when it comes to meditation to remember that change is coming, but if not for everyone, you know, if not this kind of cataclysmic, apocalyptic, you know, event, that at least that we ourselves will die. But when it comes to living one's life, it's important to you know, live it in to the, you know, exclude these things from one's attitude when it comes to living.
To live life as a work of art.
To live life as a work of art. So the painter, he does not make the paint pool at the edges of his painting, nor does he avoid painting the edge. He paints exactly in a straight line in all directions.
There are indeed many styles of painting, and some may involve painting around the edges more than else. Sometimes they leave sections of canvas completely untouched so they can be seen through.
But the artist, unless he wishes to convey something, he has no, there is no intrinsic fear of the edge of the painting.
And the same as the artist doesn't have to, the artist can go over the lines, outside the lines too of his portrait or
of course he can take it or he could leave it. Well, caller, thank you so much for taking the initiative and calling in.
Thank you.
And thanks to my co-hosts here, Smith, cowboy philosopher.
Thank you.
And to Zina van Kuchen.
Thank you very much.
And to Aurora.
Thank you, Dr. Jalis.
I'm Dr. Jalis Sakran here on Music for Human. We are on every Friday at 7 p.m. Stay tuned for Massachusetts Bay and Response. And thank you to all of the generous people who have donated, making our program continue to be possible. Ma'asalama.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two.
Look first, before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three.
Cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number 4.
Cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians in unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.
La vida hay que vivirla, no hay que tomarla en serio. Si te descuidas mucho, te lleva al cementerio. Es ferio, es ferio.